lot of reasons. Maybe I'll mention one or two, but I'm delighted that he's back with us. He taught here for years and was dean of the Bible department here, and the greatest thing I think in my life was being hired by him when 17 years ago, and the joy of teaching here has been a great experience. He has done a lot of good things. He is a graduate here. He went on to Harding Graduate School, and was it Emory where you got your doctorate? Emory?
Columbia.
Oh, well. Anyway, all right, I won't let you correct me anymore, but it was wonderful working with him. He never told me what to teach. He didn't tell me what not to teach. Except one summer I had a problem with him. He assigned me to teach the psychology class, and I told him I've only had one course in all of my college years. I've sat under a few psychologists in seminars, but that's about it. He said, oh, you'll learn it as you go along. And so that's what I did. And it was boring the first half, and then the last half I got telling some of the stories, and they liked it a lot better. And I told one about Dr. Arthur Rewald, under whom I sat in Detroit and studied somewhat for a few years, and he lectured Catholic priests on sex. And he said when he did, several of them would get up in the wintertime and open the windows. They couldn't quite take it all. Anyway, I knew that much about psychology, and that's about all. But it is a joy to have him with us, and I'm sorry of the handicaps he had that caused him to resign and retire. I wish he could come back. He has for one course. But I think if you don't know Ken Randolph, you don't know a great man. But we're glad he's here to speak, and this will be all I'll say for the day.
Thank you, Brother Martell. I appreciate that good introduction. I'm going to use the PowerPoint today. I'm 72 years old, and I believe that I have typed and got ready my last PowerPoint. I've been putting this together for over a week, and had it not been for Jason Chesser, who preaches at Wetumpka, for helping me out, I still wouldn't have it ready. I've not fed my cows in 2 days. They may be on Highway 14 hitchhiking to the feed store in Wetumpka. This is usually the time of day I take my nap. I hope it's not yours. After Eric has given out the free books to all of us, it may sound a little miserly to tell you that I have the original of the handouts, and if you want a copy of them, you can get the original and go copy it and bring it back to me, so you'll have those handouts. In 1964, when Janice and I had been married for about 3 years, we had an 8-month-old son, I heard about a McGarvey Fellowship that was being offered at the Abilene Christian University. It was offered free to preachers. They would simply pay their room and board. And so I accepted and went out there. Two classes were offered, one by J.W. Roberts on the Restoration Movement, and another by J.D. Thomas on, I've actually forgotten what that one was. The Restoration Movement class meant so much to me. Brother Roberts had begun already writing in his Restoration Journal, which he wrote and published for a long time, but those earlier years especially were some of the very best research and best writing that's in those. And I haven't checked, but I hope they're still available. I want to be able to look into them. He said in the class when we got to the point of writing term papers, he said to me, why don't you write a term paper on the Randolphs? He'd been reading in them and their history. And so I did. And I published a short paper to him. But I discovered things in there that I didn't know and that ignited my desire to find out about them. So I thought I'm going back home and polish a little few things off and write a book about the Randolphs. Well, in 64, I began to research, and the fire, as you know, sort of catches in you, and you begin going everywhere, driving, it doesn't matter how far, and researching everything you can find. And so by 1994, I was ready to write that book. And so I wrote the book on the Randolphs of Alabama in 94. In that research, I discovered a lot of things. I learned a good bit about the Rector family. The Rector family, the Fred Robertson, who lives here in Montgomery, goes to Catoma Street, is a grandson of Peter Rector, and Peter Rector and Laura Rector Randolph, my grandmother, were brother and sister. And so Fred and I are cousins, and I discovered a lot of other connections that personally I enjoyed, but especially I enjoyed the fact that these whom I was researching were Christians and interested in spreading the gospel. So I want to begin at the time that Elisha Randolph appeared on the scene. There was a moral and religious change taking place in this early years of this country. In fact, Elisha Randolph was born about 1784 in North Carolina, which part became also East Tennessee. And the United States was only 8 years old when Elisha was born. And at that time, and by the time he reached manhood, there was a general moral and spiritual degeneracy among the populace. The U.S. Census in 1790 indicates that about 5% of the population held church membership. There was a rationalistic, anti-religious spirit in young America. And this was influenced by the deism and skepticism of the French rationalists. One Tennessee minister found his entire congregation drunk, so drunk they could not listen to him when he went to preach. Another minister told of repeated encounters with refugees from justice, gambling, horse racing, fighting, and other popular sins. Also, as the colonies had thrown off the political yoke of the mother country, independent minds were casting aside practices and traditions of their mother religions. As many, or perhaps most, of the Anglican ministers sympathized with England, an anti-clerical, anti-establishment religious mentality prevailed among the people of the new country. The Tennessee Constitution, in fact, drafted in 1796, stated that no minister of the gospel or priest could be elected to the state legislature. So it came a time of religious revival. It began to sweep the frontier. I want us to notice this particular statement regarding James McGreedy, who was a Presbyterian preacher. Said 1799, McGreedy's preaching turned the religious scene of Logan County, Kentucky upside down. By 1800, revival fervor had swept into Tennessee. Methodists, Presbyterians, and Baptists forgot sectarian differences and enthusiastically worked to turn the hard hearts of their neighbors to the Savior. The notable Cane Ridge Revival, in which B.W. Stone gained prominence, and from which came his move back to the Bible, was a part of this great revival of religions. In a way that defies our understanding, thousands of hardened sinners eagerly embraced the exciting religion of the revivals. Lukewarm church members were revitalized. Our earliest preachers capitalized on this religious awakening and won thousands of honest souls to the true paths of Christianity. Such revivals attracted immense crowds of worshipers. Attendance of 5,000 was frequent. The Cane Ridge meeting of Barton W. Stone, of course, claimed 25,000 participants. And that is a quote from one of the authors of the early religious movement. It was a time when Presbyterian, Baptist, Methodist, and practically all denominations were affected, and they saw men in their ranks arise and deny many of the creedal statements, and objections were raised against the general disunity and the confusion, against human creeds and disciplines, denominational names, elevated clergy, sprinkling and baptism. And so this unrest thus led back to a return to the Scripture and to the Bible alone. They taught baptism of believers and that for remission of sins. They rejected instrumental music and worship as being foreign to the spirit and tenor of the New Testament Christianity. And I would have to say that in the main, that they were not hasty nor harsh in their conclusions and in their judgments of other people. But they often were very lenient and gave ample time for those whom they taught and discussed to come to the conclusions that they had. Likewise, we could say they received the scorn of religious neighbors and friends and sometimes families, especially those groups from which they had withdrawn themselves. Now, at what point the Randolph family came into this movement is unknown by me. Early generations of Randolphs in this country were Episcopal, that is, those up in Virginia especially. In an article about Jeremiah Randolph, the son of Elisha, H. Leo Bowles, in his book, Biographies of the Pioneer Preachers, I believe that's the title, he states that Jeremiah's people belong to the Baptist Church. Now, upon what authority he made this statement, we do not know, but Bowles' life did overlap that of Jeremiah, and consequently then he may have had first-hand information. This following incident, I want to read, this is from a book by Brother W. Ralph Horton, and it may well have been such as this that the Randolphs came into the Restoration Movement. In 1808, a number of Presbyterians and Episcopalians, pioneers, had moved from North Carolina and Virginia into the Tennessee River Valley and adjoining areas of Tennessee. Some of them had founded a community in Warren County. That's where Elisha and his family moved from when they came into Alabama. In Warren County, which became known as Philadelphia. They were religious people, but without a preacher. The lack, far from being the handicap it may have seemed at the time, proved to be a blessing of great magnitude to them and to their posterity. Having no reverend to lead them and to expound to them the Scriptures as he saw them, they turned directly to the Bible itself for guidance. As they studied together, without the usual denominational interpretations, accepting the Word of God at face value, they saw their denominational differences fade until none was left. They had united in the one faith. They learned, contrary to former beliefs and practices, that baptism was for remission of sin and a burial, and began to practice it in the manner and for the purpose. By 1810, these people were worshiping as one body, a church different from any they had known before, subscribing to no creed and wearing no distinctive name. They called themselves only Christians, and they called the Church of Christ. One writer makes this statement regarding the Post Oak Springs Church, located 2 miles east of Rockwood in Roane County, Tennessee. And this may have had specific bearing on the Elisha Randolph family, because it was in Roane County when we find the very first mention of Elisha Randolph in certain public records there. And that author gives this quote: "Following the Treaty of Tellico in 1805, which made this area available for white settlement, Rice," and I believe his name was Isaac Rice. Some of you may have run across him. Isaac Rice, his brother-in-law, William Maddock, and Joseph Mee, M-E-E, moved in from Hawkins County. They settled near the site of present-day Rockwood. These three men built a log meeting house and organized a congregation near or about 1812. Several converts were made, including a family of Randolphs, Sally McAwee and Thomas Blake. So I'm thinking that that might well have been Elisha's family. At least, if not, it was perhaps someone who was related to them, and perhaps also these relatives influenced them. At least, anyway, we find that Elisha emerges from the darkness, so far as we're concerned, into Roane County, and this was about the year 1801, I believe. few materials before we get to that. He was born in North Carolina, Tennessee, about 1784. His parents are yet unknown. There are three prominent views as to his father. Number one, he was a son of one of the Randolphs who came into East Tennessee from the Baptist Church in Albemarle County, Virginia. And there are a group of people, restorers or researchers, who have reached that conclusion and who promote that conclusion that Elisha came from that family. Secondly, that he was a son of William Randolph, a Baptist preacher who was initially associated with the French Broad Baptist, which was originally called the Baptist Church of Christ. Some hold that Elisha was a brother to Robert and Elihu Randolph. And this, I think, information was taken from a sketch of the Reformation in Tennessee by Grant, I believe, his first name. J.W. Grant, perhaps. But that is the second view. The third view is, and this is the most plausible view to me, is that Elisha was the son of Jeremiah Randolph, subject of the following quote from Greene County, Tennessee cemeteries. Now, the Jeremiah mentioned earlier is not this one. That Jeremiah is the son of Elisha. We'll get to him later. This Jeremiah we believe to be the father of Elisha. And here's this quote from Greene County, Tennessee. "Jeremiah Randolph, minister of the gospel, died at the home of John Couch, 2/11/1794. Couch was a primitive Baptist preacher who settled there several years earlier, built a church on his large estate. Reverend Randolph was the first person buried here." Now, this is a captivating thought because Elisha named his first son Jeremiah. And Elisha moved from Tennessee to Morgan County, Alabama, to the same community where John Couch had earlier moved. So you have those two things. The question here might be, Elisha was born not in 1784, and I believe Jeremiah died 10 years later. So you have the problem of either the father dying young or one of his children was only 10 years old when he died, which well could have been possible, as Larry reminded me, especially back in those times when people didn't live as long as they do now. In the same area of East Tennessee where Elisha moved, there are significant names that appear on public records with the Randolphs. This is in Roane County. the Billingsleys, who were intertwined with the Elisha's family, the Mulkeys, who intermarried with the Billingsleys and the Randolphs, the Couches, as I've just stated, John Couch Sr., John Couch Jr., and Peter Couch, whose names appear on deeds and so forth of the Randolphs in Tennessee. And these same three men and their families had earlier moved to Alabama, and they were located in the same community to which the Randolphs first moved, Gandy's Cove in Morgan County. And Bobby asked me a while ago if I'd been to Gandy's Cove, and he told me he'd looked for it like I had, hadn't found it yet, but we know about where it is. Also, Larry tells me, Larry Whitehead, who is the main man behind the Restoration Journal. Incidentally, I wanted to make a pitch for that. I hope you'll pick up a copy, latest copy, about Talbert Fanning and read it, and also begin to get those. They're very fine journals. Also, Larry tells me that a son of one of the Couch families is buried in the same cemetery where Elisha Randolph was buried in Fayette County, Alabama. Elisha was on record in Wrong County, Tennessee in 1801. I think that's the first, though I've seen one that said 1799. I don't have that actual evidence, but 1801 I do. 1801, Elisha is on record in Wrong County, East Tennessee, where he signed a petition. I believe that's a repeat there. I told you about making these PowerPoints. Elisha's marriage is recorded November 18, 1806, to Mary Polly Evans in Wrong County, daughter of Benjamin Evans. And that is the marriage record that goes back to 1801. It has one thing on it that threw me a little bit. Polly Davis is listed there as his bride-to-be. And I'm not sure why that was. Maybe some of you fellows can explain that to me. Her last name was, however, Evans, and her father, Benjamin Evans, is the one that signed it. In December 1808, Elisha was listed along with John and Robert Randolph as jurymen. Now we come to a point where we want to look at this point number two, Lorenzo Dow Randolph's letter. I'll need to explain this to you. Lorenzo Dow Randolph was the son of Elisha Randolph, the man that we're looking at. Lorenzo Dow Randolph was a preacher also, and he was still alive in 1891. Therefore, at that time, 1891, he wrote a letter to the Gospel Advocate under the heading "The Bible Alone in North America," and it covered a page or two in the Advocate. It was written from Millport, Alabama. It first quotes a short message from James E. Matthews to Barton W. Stone, editor of the Christian Messenger, that had been posted September the 4th, 1827. So here is Lorenzo Dow Randolph, and he has this Christian Messenger, 1827, before him, and he's writing to the Gospel Advocate, and he quotes this letter. It's a simple, short letter from James E. Matthews to Barton W. Stone. Now, at that time, the late 1820s, the Christian Messenger was the only religious paper read by the Alabama Brethren. Alexander Campbell's Christian Baptist began in 1823, and the Christian or the Millennial Harbinger in 1830. This letter continues. Brethren who came from Tennessee to the 1827 camp meeting. This is Lorenzo remembering. Acker, Griffin, James Anderson, Abner Hill, Levi, Nickel, Ashbury, Stone, Allen, and Carol Kendrick. If you happen to see your name in here, your last name in here, this is a good way to begin the search for some old ancestors. Griffin, I noticed later, intermarries with the Randolphs. There's Thacker Griffin, and evidently there was some connection there. Randolph stated to those in the letter, at those camp meetings, those pioneer defenders of the Bible alone came to assist. They found churches in Morgan and Blount counties, hence they did not organize them. In 1827, they found churches there. And Elisha himself had organized a church in Morgan County by 1825. Elisha remained in Morgan County 6 or 7 years in the vicinity of Hansville, Blount County, on the North and South Railroad. Elisha organized a church. In 29 or 30, Talbert Fanning was present, 23 years old, just beginning to preach. This is what Lorenzo said. They moved to Blount County about 1830. Lorenzo was sent to Morgan County, where his uncle gave him a bundle of pamphlets to give to Elisha, who said upon examining them, "Polly, here are the writings of the great Campbell." That's the first he'd seen, 1830, the writings of Alexander Campbell, and had been for a good long time preaching and establishing churches. Lorenzo said, "That was the first I had heard of that honored man." I wanted to mention Talbert Fanning there because he mentions him in the letter. And Talbert Fanning also was one of the preachers with whom Elisha often worked and preached. Talbert Fanning is perhaps the greatest, if not one of the greatest, restorers and educators that has lived among us. His writings in the Christian Review are, I think, some of the best writings that he ever had. This is before the Civil War. This is before the Gospel Advocate, before David Lipscomb College. I was reading in his and writings there, and someone asked him some questions about the Book of Revelation. Fanning said succinctly in one sentence, "I'm still in the epistles. I know nothing about the Book of Revelation." J.W. Roberts also told something I never have found verified. He said that Talbert was traveling in the country in North Alabama. It began to get night. He saw a church building with the lights on, and so he stopped and went in, sat on the back seat. There were some brethren up front talking. He sat back there until they finished. They stood up and they saw him. They said, "Well, there's Brother Fanning back there. So Brother Fanning, come up and help us up here." What they were doing, they were withdrawing fellowship from a brother for fox hunting. So they told Brother Fanning about it. They said, we're trying to get this brother straightened out. We're going to withdraw fellowship from him for fox hunting." He said, "Well, do you reckon he'd sell me his dogs if he's going to go out of the fox hunting business?" So there were two or three camp meetings held in Morgan County. The first in 1825. Preachers present were John Mulkey, Robert Randolph, Elihu Randolph, and others. The church in Blount County referred to by Matthews in his letter, the one he wrote that he included, had been built up and organized by Elisha 2 or 3 years previous to the time that he, Matthews, attended in 1827. I wanted you to note this. John Knox, who has a history of Morgan County, he wrote this book in 1967. He says he told about the various religions in the country. He told about the Church of Christ. He said a church in Molden in Lawrence County and bands of followers and sites in Morgan County appear to have been among the first representatives of this brotherhood in Alabama. The early Morgan sites were Cedar Plains and Piney Ridge in the south and southwestern parts of the county. Elisha Randolph is listed as the first of this group in Morgan County. He represented the religious paper, The Christian Messenger, and preached at Somerville in 1830. I wanted to notice the preaching companions that Elisha had. First issue of the Christian Messenger, 1826. There was a meeting near Murfreesboro, Tennessee. James E. Matthews, Mansell W. Matthews, Crockett McDonald, John Mulkey, Isaac Mulkey, Robert Randolph, Elisha Randolph, Elihu Randolph, B.F. Hall, and E.D. Moore. Now, there's a roll call of some of the important folks who preached the gospel back then. In 1827, Ephraim D. Moore reported in the Christian Messenger on the annual meeting at Antioch in Jackson County, Alabama. Gave a list of the preachers. Those first who were ordained. I don't know how they ordained back then, but there were Elisha Price, John H. Parkhill, Elisha Randolph, Mansell Matthew, John McDonald, Thacker Griffin, Isaac Muldy, William Clapp, Crockett McDonald, Robert Bates, Jonathan Wallace, James Matthews, Reuben Martis, and E.D. Moore. And the unordained, James Anderson, Lorenzo D. Griffin, Jonathan G. Ward, William J. Price, M.W. Wilson, and Andrew Russell and Jonathan Parker. In the Christian Messenger, in 1831, a list of Alabama preachers was recorded. James A. Anderson, Thacker Griffin, Lorenzo Griffin, Reuben Martis, Jonathan Parker, William Price, John Northcutt, Jesse Wilkes, Talbert Fanning, Jonathan Wallace, Elisha Randolph, and James E. Matthews. And in 1890, Carol Kendrick reminisced in the Gospel Advocate about the early days and gave a list of the first preachers in Tennessee and Alabama. This, I think, the most significant. The best he remembered, Talbert Fanning and William R. Hooten. He then listed James C. Anderson, Alan Kendrick, Thacker Griffin, Lynn Despain, who I think was of the Huguenots up in Jackson County and then later went out into Texas, I believe.
Lauderdale County.
J. Fanning, who was, he may have been a brother to Talbert, I'm not sure, J. Fanning. W. H. Wharton, Crockett McDonald, John McDonald. Those were brothers in Moulton. And James E. Matthews married one of the McDonald's daughters. Wilkes, Jerry or Jeremiah, and Lorenzo Dow Randolph. Those are two preaching sons of Elisha. James Gilliland, James Holmes, Christopher Gist, the Sewells and the Sowells, B.F. Hall, W.D. Jordan, and others. This is a picture of Jeremiah Randolph. I got that from a page that Larry sent me. It was not as plain, but it has a Randolph look about it. So you can believe that he was one of the Randolphs. And this is, let me back up one. Okay, I'll save Lorenzo Dow's until later. In this picture, we have Kendrick giving the older crop, E.D. Moore, James Matthews, Robert and Elisha Randolph, S.B. Giles, Strickland, Spear, Hill, Hooten, Judge Mack, Osborne, Joe Callahan, Abner Peter, Yates Trott, Curley, Craig, Anderson, Davis, and others. Remember that Kendrick was one who traveled with them, and evidently, even in 1890, he was still very much alive and doing work, because there's a beautiful exchange of letters between Jeremiah Randolph, who wrote to Kendrick about the book Kendrick had published and he had read, and then Kendrick wrote him a long letter back. Both of those are published in the Advocate in about 1890, and those two letters are in this periodical, the Restoration Journal, Talbert Fanning, and it would be worth the price of the book to have those two letters. I wanted to mention the camp meetings because you notice it's quite often spoken of. The camp meetings were held annually, and this is when they would have the most preaching and have the most converts. Here's an example. The second day in August conference in Lauderdale County, Alabama. On the third Sunday in McNair County, third Sunday Limestone County. McNair County, Tennessee, Limestone County, Alabama. Same Sunday. Fourth Sunday, Jularis, McNair County, Tennessee. Fourth, Moulton, Lawrence County. Fifth Sunday, Magoo's, Madison County, Tennessee. Gandy's Cove, Morgan County, Alabama. That's where Lorenzo and family lived, as well as others. Then you have this, September, Goodman, Dyers County, Tennessee, Walker County, Alabama, first Sunday. Billingsley, Gibson County, Tennessee, Billingsley, Blount County, Alabama. No doubt, perhaps the same from the same families. Crooked Creek, Carroll County, Tennessee, the third Cherokee Nation, Billingsley. Cherokee Nation was the eastern side of Alabama at that time. It had not become all Alabama yet. Fourth, Guesses at Carroll County, Tennessee, and at Jackson County at Lewis's, Jackson County, Alabama. Then, continuing that, the 1st of October, the 1st of October in Hickman County, Tennessee, the 1st Winchester, Franklin County, 2nd Globe Creek, Morrow County, Tennessee, 3rd Rufford County, Tennessee. Now, I'm not sure why they had that only in Tennessee, but Tennessee extended into October. James E. Matthews wrote a lengthy report to the Christian Messenger on September the 24th, 1827, of attending camp meetings in Limestone, Morgan, and Blount counties. There were numbers added in each place indicating existing churches. He also mentioned several other camp meetings have been held in this state where the increase of the church has been considerable. These reports give an indication of the evangelistic nature of those brethren and one of the primary reasons why the cause spread so rapidly and extensively. They give an idea of the wide range of their travels and the sacrifice of time and effort. Travel was necessarily limited to horseback, wagon, walking, or river traffic. I believe that's all. Yet, they travel from one side of the state to the other, sometimes into adjacent and into the Cherokee Nation. Most, if not all, these preachers had to depend upon the labor of their own hands for support, and that would be primarily by farming. This is probably why they scheduled it in the late summer and fall. If they were away preaching and it came time to pick the cotton and pull the corn, the wife and the kids could do that while they were all preaching, and so that helped everything. Sometimes these are called conferences. I want you to notice that they were aware of the meaning of that word in terms of religion, religious bodies, and later which came in the Disciples of Christ. In 1827, Ephraim D. Moore stated in the Christian Messenger that the conference was not for the purpose of legislating, but for making arrangements for the execution of Christ's laws, the administration of His Word. James E. Matthews wrote in 1831, "In conference, we dispense with the etiquette usually observed." He meant in the denomination. No bishop was called to the chair, nor was any clergyman or lay member chosen president. We entered no resolves upon our minute book, nor did we take the name of an advisory council. But with one accord in one place, we mutually engaged in arranging the appointments for our next annual meetings so as best to promote the cause of the Redeemer. The fifth point we come to is Elisha's moves in Alabama. From Morgan County to Blount County by 1830, the Alabama census, he was in Blount County in 1830. He organized a church in Hansville, and this was the Billingsley settlement in, there was a Billingsley settlement in Blount County. Larry tells me that the Billingsley settlement was where the city of Hansville grew up. So they were one in the same place. As the Randolphs intermarried with the Billingsley, the Randolphs were probably nearby. Jeremiah, son of Elisha, married Courtney Billingsley in 1829. And Mariah, daughter of Elisha, married Jephthah Billingsley in 1831. Lorenzo Dow, in his letter, says married in 1832, but the Blount County marriage record has 1831. Elisha continues his moves from Blount County to Walker County in 1832, about 16 miles east of Jasper from the Sipsa River. There he organized a church. Other brethren moved in. And a church was organized on Cane Creek, 4 miles south of Jasper. Another west of Jasper, and I believe that was called Lost Creek. I'm not certain of that, but I believe. And this was established by Jeremiah Randolph, and the son of Elisha, and Carol Kendrick preached in a camp meeting there. This is a photo of the log house that Elisha Randolph built on his land and where he died. Perhaps he spent his last days here. I'm not sure when this photo was made, but it had been somewhat renovated when I saw it in the 70s. And when I took a picture of it, there was, I believe, a car or some sign out front, a car or truck. And back then, you know, our antennas for the TVs was on a long metal pole, and the TV was up there. So my picture of his log house had a car and a television antenna before it. Now, I was showing one of my cousins who I was trying to convert to becoming interested in this research. He wasn't very interested. So I was showing him everything I had, and I showed him this picture. I said, now this is where our great-great-great-grandfather lived. He built this house. He said, I didn't know they had TVs back then. So I decided I'd write him off. Elisha then moved from Walker County into Fayette County in 1841. He bought acreage there in Fayette County. 1849, he bought 80 acres, and 1855, 40 acres. And he lived in this log house. He was a companion of the beloved John Taylor, and they labored together at that place. Elisha and Mary Randolph almost closes our time. I did have slides of Jeremiah Randolph, their oldest son and the gospel preacher, and Mariah Randolph, the oldest daughter just after Jeremiah, and her husband, who married a Bisley, and she was the mother of three preachers. And then Lorenzo Dow, who himself became a preacher. And though there was none of his immediate sons who preached, there were many, have been many in his lineage who do preach. And he is my great-great-grandfather. Elisha Randolph died in Fayette County, September the 23rd, 1856, buried on Randolph Mountain in the Lawrence Randolph Cemetery. And Lorenzo Dow wrote in the Gospel Advocate. My father, Elder Elisha Randolph, fell asleep in the Lord on 23 Ultimate. He lived and died a Christian. From my first recollection of him to the day of his death, his life was exemplary. It was his soul's delight to live out the holy injunctions of the Lord. As a father, a companion, a citizen, a disciple, as an elder of the church and a minister of the gospel, he lived for the Lord. He was 71 years old, no more of earth. He is at rest. Carol Kendrick, whom we have mentioned, on the same page of the obituary, said that Renzo Dow's letter will remind many, as it does me, of scenes in the past full of interest and of our common mortality. May it lift our expectations and attentions to a better land. Father Randolph was one of the most lovely men I ever knew. His very memory mellows my feelings and makes me more religious. There is no record of Mary Randolph's death, nor of the location of her grave. Jeremiah Randolph, I think, was the best preacher of Elisha's family. I think Jeremiah probably did more work, more travels, than Lorenzo Dow did, who also preached. Jeremiah had a number of children, and three of his sons were gospel preachers. He also faced a great tragedy. This is recorded in one of the journals, Restoration Journal. One of his young sons came where they were cutting trees, and a tree fell on him and killed him, just a small child. I forget how old exactly. Larry would know, or some of you would know. But Jeremiah grabbed the body up, hoping he was still alive, and ran to a nearby creek or stream to put water on him, hopefully to revive him. But he couldn't. And there was a denominational preacher in the community. They began to tell that Jeremiah, when his son was almost dying, ran to the river to baptize him to make sure he'd go to heaven. And that caused great grief until some preacher, I've forgotten who, in the community, called upon that other preacher and made him apologize. And to tell everybody he'd ever told that to apologize and correct that. And that's what he did. And Mariah had three sons who preached. She had five sons who on the same day went to Fayette County and entered into service in the Confederate Army in 1862. One was wounded, spent a good time in the hospital. One had some kind of sickness, had to take a 60-day leave. One was wounded. He was sent to a camp near Illinois or Indiana, and in that camp he died, did not return home. One of them also was a private, no information about him. The fifth one was shot in the leg and had to have the leg amputated. And I have the copy of the request that he makes for that artificial leg. And he wrote to the Gospel Advocate some years later, in the 80s, I believe. I peg shoes on the weekday and preach on Sundays. So he was making his way, still doing some preaching. And J.E.M. Billingsley, I may have some photos. That's Virgil Randolph, probably the most notable son, preaching son of Jeremiah. The man at the top, those are three sons of Anne Mariah, and the man at the top is J.E.M. Billingsley. He was the one who baptized Anne Mariah and performed her wedding, so she named her first son James E. Matthews Billingsley. He was a preacher in Arkansas, and John Burdine, the one who lost her leg, was a preacher in Mississippi. There's Lorenzo Dow and his wife. My great aunt in Winfield, Alabama, gave that to me in 1964. There you have Lorenzo Dow Randolph on the left with the beard. His son, Elisha Novation Randolph, on the right. And above him, Lorenzo Dow's grandson and Elisha Novation's son, Gerald Garfield Randolph. And that's my grandfather. And it was his wife who was Fred's grandfather's sister, Laura Randolph. Well, I believe that's all. Thanks so much.